Hey everybody, it's Mr. Fourth Row. First of all, before we get into this episode of TTN at the Movies, just wanted to make a quick little disclaimer that the cadence quality may not be very good with this recording. I was really sick for probably about 2 weeks now with this really nasty cold and a little tired and everything like that, especially as you will see in part two of our recording, the second movie that we were reviewing in this episode. But anyways, got to get it out, put it out. So enjoy nonetheless. Talk to y'all later.
And now, I'd like to show my love by making for you a Quebec pizza.
What's that?
Pop-Tart with the ketchup. She's good.
Daniel Palmer, San Antonio, Texas.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Ba-la-la-la.
It's showtime.
Welcome back to TTN at the Movies. TTN at the Movies is brought to you by all the great shows you can find on the Trending Topics Network, the brand new Trending Topics Network, like my favorite podcast, What's on Fight, Lou Chat, All Beer Inside, STFU, Wrestling Cheers, Hanging with Heavy, and so much more. I am Mr. Fourth Row, and once again, I am joined by my friend, Daisy. Daisy, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I am good, except for experiencing a little bit of seasonal allergies. But we're back. We're going to be reviewing, once again, two movies that we watched recently. One was a special event movie at the theater, and the other was a movie that we got on Blu-ray that we actually watched, that we alluded to in the last time that we were here on TTN at the Movies. So we'll get into that right now, I suppose. You ready?
I am ready.
Okay. All right, so like we had mentioned, we were cutting our episode off to watch a movie, and that movie that we watched was Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Now, I'm assuming that you saw Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I actually own it, so we can watch that over and over.
Yeah.
And the good thing is that I've earned points on Disney movies anywhere, so I can add to the points there, and we can get more fun Marvel stuff and add to our collection. So
that's cool. So let's do a little quick thing on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1. Did you enjoy it? If so, what kind of things did you enjoy about it? And all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, so I think like Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was, I kind of like with Baby Groot. So he's so tiny, and the opening scene is where they're fighting, and he just keeps running around, and they're trying to protect him, and you know, he still keeps saying his main word, I am Groot, but it's a little baby voice. I think that was the cutest thing. And the music is just, I love the music in both of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. So.
Well, I think actually the soundtrack, the movies actually played a big part, and they actually almost told the story of both movies. And that's the reason why when I first saw Volume 1 and the way that they weaved the songs into the storyline, they helped tell the storyline, because like Volume 1, when the Pina Colada song, when he's dancing and
in the going after the orb, you know, he was it and just kind of nonchalant, you know, kicking the little creatures and using all them stuff like that. So, you know, I was very glad to see that they did the same thing in Volume 2. And that was one of the great things that I liked seeing, that they continued that in Volume 2. And then, yes, I agree with the very beginning where they're having that big battle and Baby Groot is just walking back and running back and forth. I think he was trying to, like, plug in the whatever apparatus kind of things to help defend the whatever they were trying to defend against the battling, invading forces and stuff like that. And it was just kind of great because, you know, all the characters got to interact with them as well as they're battling, you know. They're saying, you know, basically, hey, what are you doing? You know, get in here and help us and all that kind of stuff like that. So I thought that was a very great beginning of the movie.
Yeah, no, I think that actually, now that I think about it, that thing that they were trying to plug together was actually the, which one is that character that's the raccoon looking thing?
Rocket Raccoon?
Yeah. So, oh yeah, he is a raccoon. so honestly, I think it was like an amplifier to the Walkman. Like they were trying to hook up the music to it. And then once he got it to play, then it was, you know, he was just dancing around. And I thought it was really cute. I was like, oh. And then once they had their music, like they were able to defeat the people that they were fighting against.
So yeah.
I'm like, that was pretty cool. And then like later on in the movie, the raccoon, Rocket Raccoon, like, he sets up all these traps and stuff in the forest, and he has his music, and as each one of the music parts of it, like, go off, the different song parts is, like, a bomb would go off, or the poisonous arrows would go off and stuff, so it was kind of cool. Like, I think the music in it, you know, like you said, goes well with the movies. It sets up the storyline.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, those traps actually didn't do all too well against Yondu's army because they, you know, got in there and got to the Guardians.
Oh, yeah. You know. But it was kind of interesting, like, the different twists and turns in the whole plot.
Well, right. And one of the biggest ones was with Yondu.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, here's Yondu. They, you know, he's supposed to be the leader of his faction, and he has always had the soft spot for Quill.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And, of course, you know, spoiler alert, if you guys haven't seen the movie yet, you know, he basically sacrifices himself.
Yeah.
For Quill. So, that was kind of nice. I really liked that. That was kind of cool. You know, they did kind of lead into that. They didn't mention that in the first movie that he did have a soft spot for Quill, but you know, now he actually got to act up upon it. So that was very interesting. So it'd be kind of cool if they could do something, you know, Volume 3 or whatever, but we'll see. But you know, there's supposed to be, you know, kind of a little sidebar here. Guardians of the Galaxy is supposed to kind of fit in this Marvel universe, you know, with the, you know, Avengers and everything like that. But I'm not sure how exact. I'm not that big of a comic person to know, like, all the backstory stuff. So I'm not sure how they're going to work it. But it is be very interesting to see how they do it. So.
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting because you have the sister goes off to the sister of the green lady. What's the green lady?
Samora?
Samora. Yeah, the sister of Samora. She is out to avenge, like, her everything, like, because of the fact that she's all, she's not, like, fully human. She's bionic and stuff, so she's, like, more machine than anything. And at the end, like, she goes, and instead of feeling love towards her sister, she goes off to actually seek revenge on her father, so,
yeah,
for making them go through all the stuff that they did. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised that Marvel, Disney will come out with another movie with that.
Volume 3?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially with that, to see if how it pans out and everything.
Yeah, well, you know, Disney being Disney, if it makes money, they'll do it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's always a fun one. So. Yeah.
You know, Disney's got a lot under their umbrella now. They've got, of course, Marvel, and, you know, now they got with having kind of Superman, or not Superman, but Spider-Man kind of wrapped up now, kind of able to actually get into it, you know, even though,
yeah,
Spider-Man was owned by, I believe, by Sony, but they got him in the, you know, of course, got it in the last Spider-Man movie, which I have not seen, Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
And
then they have the Warner Brothers.
Yeah, well, that's part of Sony.
Pixar, which is kind of interesting because, like, even the shows like Once Upon a Time and the regular primetime shows are on there.
Well, yeah, that's that's because that's part of Buena Vista, which is,
yeah,
part of the Disney ESPN conglomerate.
Yeah, but they're just kind of amazing. And then, like, lately I've noticed on Disney is that they're showing a lot of Despicable Me movies.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, well, what's the connection with that? So.
Well, I don't know, because that's...
It's kind of weird.
That's DreamWorks, I believe, so, yeah. Yeah.
So I think, like, DreamWorks is somewhere in there, but, you know, overall, like, I think with the variety that they have is, you know, they can continue growing and always changing, just like Walt had expected, was that, you know, with his companies, he always wanted to have the future of Disney and keep growing and growing and, yeah, growing, and not just staying stagnant, is that he wanted it be that way. And you can see that with the theme parks as well. So,
yeah, you have any favorite parts of this movie?
Besides baby grout, I know the one where Quill actually defeats his father. I think, you know, that one was the best part. I think it's, as far as graphics and everything, I think that was the best.
Yeah.
Because he overcomes him with his powers that he's able to...
Summon, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was the best.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that was... I was actually kind of surprised because they always kind of led to Quill's dad being, you know, a good guy because he was trying, you know, he wanted... You know, that's why Yondu went after him to go bring him to him. You know, that's why he went to Earth to grab him in Volume 1. And then he just was just a overbearing, power-hungry entity.
Yeah. 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 Wow.
I think some of my favorite parts in the movie was, of course, a lot of stuff with Dave Bautista that played Drax.
Oh, yeah.
And especially the parts where they met the, I can't think of the character's name, but basically she was the empath, so she could draw on people's emotions.
Oh, that snail-looking thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
And how, you know, she was reading, like, Drax's emotions, and, you know, he's a little bit more than what he... seems on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, also when she read Quill and Zamora and figured out, oh, you guys like each other, and they're like, no. And then Drax, of course, ha ha, you guys love each other, or whatever.
Yeah, he was so funny. For some reason, I was thinking that Vin Diesel played him, but I don't know. I don't.
Vin Diesel was Groot.
Oh, it was Groot. Yeah. Oh, the original. Okay. Yeah, I thought that was Vin Diesel.
No, that's Dave Bautista.
Yeah, but, you know, he's really good, too, so.
Yeah.
I like all the actors in that. It's always good.
Yeah. So. They have a lot of great supporting cast, you know, especially like Yondu's right hand man. You know, he was good. You know, he did what he needed to do to kind of keep the factions and his crew and the crew, Yondu's crew, kind of together. That was kind of nice. I liked that too.
Yeah. No. So. Absolutely. No. That was. Yeah. I think. Oh, and then at the end, that whole funeral procession for.
Yondu.
Yeah. I mean, that was awesome because he got like a, you know, like all the others came and gave him. There was like fireworks and stuff. I might be mixing that up with something else though.
Yeah, but all the like, all the ships and stuff, I think.
Yeah, they came out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird.
Right.
Oh yeah, that was right. That was that movie.
Yeah, and then of course, Yondu's right hand man is trying to now learn the arrow.
At
the end, so.
Yeah, that was funny. It like goes flying around, and then he, like, destroys things at the same time, so. Yeah. It was funny.
That's good. So, overall, you enjoyed the movie?
I did. It was really good. I think the only distraction that we had was the... Was the wonderful helicopter that landed outside.
Mysteriously landed.
Mysteriously landed, because I didn't even hear it. I don't think we both heard it.
Yeah.
It landed... outside in the park, which is right next door to where I live. So that was an interesting event. Thought at first it was a drone, and then it kept getting louder, and it just seemed as though it was more electronic and anything, and then to hear the helicopter actually start up. So we didn't hear it land. We heard it starting up.
Yeah, we heard it wind up, and that was kind of weird.
Yeah, and then it came back about 2:30 in the morning again and did the same thing. So we have yet to figure out who or what it was or what they were doing, but imagine that it's probably belongs to the water plant next door. So, or the city of Lakewood or Flight for Life. It could be one of those.
Yeah, maybe they were doing some kind of exercises. You know, we had thought maybe it was. Flight for Life or something like that, you know, in conjunction with some EMTs that were maybe in one of the apartment buildings in the complex or something like that. But
yeah.
It was really hard to tell what was exactly going on. But it seems like we have a knack for when we're getting together doing these movies that we're planning on reviewing, we get some kind of excitement or great story. So... we're going to have to make sure we keep that streak going on.
Yeah. It's like very bizarre though. I'm like, I was not expecting to have that happen. And then again, like later on early in the morning of waking me up. So who knows, but it just continues. Let the fun continue.
So. Yeah. Well, so listeners, we are going to have to break this episode up into like two parts. So we're going to make a hard cut here because we have to go to our volleyball game tonight, the night recording, and then we'll be back with our review of our second movie that we went to go see, special event. And so we'll talk to you in a couple hours, but for you guys, it'll be just a few seconds. So talk to you in just a moment. All right, and we're back. We just, like you said, we just got back from volleyball. We didn't win our match, but we played pretty darn well. Didn't lose by too much. So, the next movie we're going to review is the 35th anniversary of... Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, and this is the director's cut. They did a special screening, Fandango, was it Fandango? I forget who did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Fandango.
So.
Oh no, Fathom Events.
Fathom Events, yes, it was Fathom Events, yes.
Fandango is where we buy tickets.
Right. So, I've seen Star Trek II Wrath of Khan many times. And Daisy, have you seen it?
No, I got a little confused because I could have sworn we did watch the Khan one, but apparently this isn't the one. It's after the newer one came out. It's kind of like the little Star Wars thing of the older one is shown versus the newer one, and it's just really strange.
Okay, so so the technical aspects of this is where Daisy got confused was when Star Trek Beyond came out last year, a lot of movie theaters did some screenings where you could go see the 2009 version of Star Trek, and then Star Trek Into Darkness, and then Star Trek Beyond. And so I was trying to explain to Daisy that when Star Trek 2009 came out, and the Romulan mining ship came through the wormhole and attacked the Kelvin, that that changed the timeline. And so now we have a Kelvin timeline and a Prime timeline. The Prime timeline in Star Trek is, of course, what we all have known before 2009. So with Kirk and Spock and McCoy, played by, William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy, and DeForest Kelly, respectively. So that changed, and that was, I was trying to tell her that that's a very clever thing they did so that they can now continue with the movie franchise with different actors playing some of the pivotal roles. So that's where she got confused. But as you, some of the listeners may know, that the Star Trek Into Darkness, they had Khan in there. And it was very similar to Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, where instead of Spock dying at the end, we had Kirk, quote-unquote, dying at the end when he was trying to get the warp core online by getting the whatever aligned very well. I forget what exactly it was, you know, I'm losing my Star Trek cred here. But anyways, this was the director's version of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, and I had never seen it because I didn't think that there was very much added, but I think it was either a year or two or so that they re-released this on DVD or in Blu-ray. I think it was just Blu-ray, actually, and added the extra scenes. So so this is the first time I got to see it in the theater with Fathom Events. Beforehand, they did a little introductory with William Shatner. Yeah. And interviewer talking about, you know, this is the 35th anniversary of Wrath of Khan, and talking about, you know, just a little bit of Star Trek stuff, and his director, his directing of Star Trek V, which, of course, you know, a lot of people say that's probably the worst Star Trek movie of all time. It's kind of funny, too, I don't know if you know this, but when it comes to the Star Trek movies, it seems like the odd number Star Trek movies are the bad ones, and the even ones are the good ones. So in this case, Star Trek II was really good. A lot of people say that's probably the best Star Trek movie. Voyage Home was good. Undiscovered Country was good, and so on. So you think this is the first time that you've actually seen The Wrath of Khan, the actual, this Star Trek II, this version?
Yeah, so, I mean, the thing was, is, like, maybe I'm missing something, because I remember, like, the Star Trek episodes, and this weekend I was watching the BBC on it, and okay. I remember, like, towards the end of it, I remember Spock somehow arriving on this planet and the module, and I didn't think that, for so, I had never put it together because, like, towards the end, like, he dies, and then they shoot the, shoot his casket off, and then it lands on the planet. But then I remember watching some of the TV shows growing up, and he, like, comes back. I don't know. I may be thinking of a movie that he's in, but...
That is Star Trek II. That's the actual movie where they put him in a torpedo and launched him into the Genesis planet.
Yeah, but I thought he comes back to life after that.
He does in Star Trek III.
Oh, okay. So, like, I think that's probably why I was watching III.
Yeah.
I remember that part, but I also, like, that's why I got a little confused, because I could have sworn that last year we learned about Khan, but I don't remember ever seeing the Wrath of Khan. And I was like, well, he's marooned on this island because they were frozen in time, the one that we saw last year, and now we're catching up to him, but it's an older
version. Right, yeah. Well, they, Into Darkness, they were cryologically frozen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, him and his crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the Benedict Cumberbatch version of Khan.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like, it was just interesting. I did think it was really funny, though, that that he was like all this, like, this huge muscular guy in this one versus, like, the newer one, and I'm like, he doesn't look the same.
Yeah. Like, well, did you catch that they, you know, in the segment before with Shatner and the interviewer, that they were talking about Ricardo Montalban having that accident, the horse accident.
No.
Where he had injured his legs, and because he injured his legs, he had worked on his upper body so much, so that his because of, you know, having the problems with his legs. So, you know, there was always this thing about, you know, was this real or was it, you know, was it makeup or whatever? But, you know, the story goes that it was totally real.
Yeah.
And of course, I don't know if you remember, you know, he was of course in Fantasy Island.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah, he was the guy. Welcome to Fantasy Island!
Oh, that, now I see
Ricardo
the face.
Ricardo Montalban, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The plane bus! Again.
Yeah, well, that was his... That was,
his sidekick.
Sidekick, yeah.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't have even thought that, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that was... I thought it was kind of interesting, and then, like, the interview at the beginning with William Shatner was, they were saying, like, after each movie that they did, that they burned the set, which was a little bizarre. Like, why would you burn the set when, you know, you might need it for next time, but they kept burning it.
Yeah, well, they didn't know that he was talking about. They didn't know how financially well each movie was going to do, so there was no reason to, or any thought that they would have to keep the sets, to keep the bridges and things like that. So sometimes they've had to rebuild them, and now of course now they pretty much try to store everything they possibly can. So if you see, sometimes you see things on the internet that, oh, such and such show is throwing stuff away in the dumpster, and so you have people trying to sneak up on television studio lots to try to steal those and, you know, grab those and things like that. So, but now they don't. I don't think in this case Paramount owns the movie franchises of Star Trek, and CBS owns the actual TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of weird how they have to have a kind of a little collaboration to make sure that everything stays what's called canon, you know, stays on the same kind of timeline. So that's that.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it was kind of interesting, because, like, just watching it for the first time, I'm going to say it's most likely the first time that I have seen that one.
Right. And they describe it as a, as a submarine battle in space. Do you kind of get that feeling?
Yeah, I did. It was actually...
Because it was the Defiant, or the... the Defiant versus the Enterprise.
No. Yeah, so... it was kind of interesting because they go to battle, and then with Khan, like, trying to steal the Genesis code.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of interesting because, like, they were able to... Kirk didn't want to, like, as an admiral, he didn't want to go back to the ship, but then, or he kind of wanted to go back, but because he had his rank that he was being left there. I can see the struggle, like, as a veteran, like, you want to go back, but at the same time, you're like, really, why would you want to?
Yeah.
You know, and it's, I think it's more of the camaraderie, and it's also the thrill of it, just the adrenaline rush was what he was missing, and for him to go back,
right?
You know, which was kind of which really resonated. You know, I could see the internal struggle because he was collecting all those stuff from Earth and everything, and
right.
Yeah,
more antiques for your collection.
More antiques, and then the fact that he had to, he was wearing glasses, and they fixed them for him, and then.
Yeah.
It was nice to see that.
Right. So. Yeah, that was one of the scenes they added in there for the director's cut, because they, in the regular version, they don't talk about, oh, these glasses are like 400 years old. And so I thought the director's cut was great. I was like, why did some of this stuff get cut? You know, so a lot of times it's for time. Or it's for content, or it doesn't develop the story. But nowadays, with the content that is added on Blu-ray and digital and such, I don't see why they don't keep some of this stuff on. You know, because a lot of movies now are not hitting an hour and 40-some-odd minutes. Now a lot of movies are hitting, like... 2 hours and 16 minutes, especially a lot of a lot of the Marvel movies, it seems like to me.
Yeah, I think there's more of a, you know, it's more, to me, I like a very good plot in a movie, and no matter how long it takes to get there, I think, you know, as a whole, like, you shouldn't rush through it. You know, it's like rushing through a book. I'd like to hear... you know, or see, because I listen to a lot of audiobooks, is I want to, you know, enjoy the story. So the more details, the better. And I think if you rush through and you don't do the direct, you know, let all the content being in there.
Right.
You know, you miss part of the story.
Yeah. But back then, when this movie was made, they had to, you know, try to make a movie as short as possible, because... it was all about, you know, money and content and that kind of stuff. And so they figured if some of the stuff wasn't really relevant, they cut it. And, you know, and I could see that now the stuff that was added in, it's like, yeah, it makes sense that they could cut that. But then watching this director's version, I was like, yeah, it kind of added a nice little twist to things. And I kind of popped for a lot of that stuff because I was like, oh, that's funny. That's good. You know, and a lot of it was... a lot of it was this dialogue between characters. So it was, you know, like the, you know, scene between McCoy and Kirk at Kirk's apartment, you know, and, you know, was a lot of the, that was added between when Kirk, Spock, and McCoy were talking about the Genesis device and all that kind of stuff, and you know, discussing all that and, you know, what's going on Space Regular One and all that, you know, what's all that. So that was good. I enjoyed all that. It kind of added a nice little touch for me to feel like I'm watching a different movie, even though I've seen Star Trek II many, many times. So, but... overall, I mean, I enjoy that movie. I thought it's very good. It's a movie I can watch over and over again, and sometimes it is something I'll put on just in the background. So, But with this being your first time watching it, did you enjoy it? Was it something that kept your interest?
Yeah, like I want to watch it again just to see what else I might have missed in there.
Yeah.
Because like I have a lot of questions. Like maybe I should start from, you know, one and then two and then three and just keep going.
Watch from Star Trek the Motion Picture, which is a lot of people say it's god awful because it's so slow.
Yeah, but you know they do show it on the BBC a lot. Yeah. So
well, you probably want to watch a digital copy or a DVD version or something like that because you won't get anything cut edited. You know that would be on a TV channel like the BBC or on on HBO or anything like that. So I would suggest probably that. To do that, but when you go to then maybe rewatch Star Trek II,
mm-hmm.
would you might want I'm thinking you might want to watch the theatrical version, and then maybe watch the director's cut over
mm-hmm.
right after to see all those extra little things that they added.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Because you've gone in the reverse. You've seen the director's version, and now you'll go see the theatrical release version and like, well, I'm not sure if I know what I missed or what got added when you kind of go in the reverse order than that's normal. Yeah.
No, I agree. I think I'm gonna have to do that in so it's just like, sorry, I have a little puppy dog that wants attention, so. what are you doing? There you go. Go down. There you go. Go play. But no, I agree. I've got to watch it, you know, and see what the different digital and stuff, so. You know, but it was worth the watch. I just get a little confused on certain things, but.
Yeah. And we went to go see this at the Cinemark, which I've never been to Cinemark. It's basically, you know, kind of what your other movie chains have kind of now, the higher-end seating with the reclining seats and that kind of stuff like that, you know, reserved seating. So it was kind of a, you know, a little more upscale experience. So that was fun. We didn't have anything exciting happen to us for this one.
Well, going up there, they were doing the Italian festival and stuff, but we missed the end of that. I think getting around there was because of how the festival had just finished up, like the roadblocks and stuff.
Yeah, the movie theater that we went to is in one of these newer kind of developments where it's a mixed use, where it's a shopping district as well as you got housing really close by, you know, apartment housing and stuff like that. So it's one of these like mixed use, which a lot of shopping malls are now being torn down and they're being then built back up into like these, so where they're like a kind of like a town center type thing where you can get a lot of shopping done. Usually like have a big chain like a Target or a Walmart and then maybe some entertainment and then like some of the not quote the bad hole in the wall like eateries, but like more of, oh, this is, you know, just, you know, this is, here's an Italian place and here's a pizza place and here's, you know, maybe a deli, you know. And they're just little small little places in these little shopping center district type stuff. So that's kind of where we went for this particular one. And, you know, this one has a Wells Fargo attached to it. And, you know, all kinds of crazy things also. There's a Dick's Sporting Goods.
There's a gym. There's a P.F. Chang's.
Is
it, like, to describe it, it's more of a like inclusive neighborhood, so like the apartments all like surround it, and then in between they have like all those shops and restaurants, which is good. Like I like that area because they have like free concerts on the weekends and stuff, so local bands.
Yeah, like I said, a lot of shopping malls are now being replaced with this. So, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't have anything really else to say about it. I mean, I've seen the movie. I enjoyed it. I really liked the extra stuff. I'm like, it's so much that now I'm going, because I have not purchased it on DVD or anything. So I'm like, I'm thinking I'm going to go out and buy it. It's only $10. So I'm like, what the heck?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
No, I got to, like, add that to my list of movies to get.
Yeah, I'm thinking, oh, maybe I'll watch it again with the director's cut. And I'm not sure if the director's version has where you could turn one or another, but I wouldn't see why they wouldn't have. When you put in the disc, we would say, which one version do you want to watch?
You know, I have it would couple. Make sense. Yeah, I have a couple of that is director's cut, and that does give you the option of theatrical.
Or it could be a couple discs or something like that, yeah. There's a lot of movies that do that, so.
Yeah, so.
All right, well, we don't have any idea right now what we may be reviewing in the future, but we do hope you guys have enjoyed our review of a lot of these throwback stuff. Throwback movies. I kind of like to go into a lot of throwback movies because you get to see them on a big screen. You get to make it an experience. You know, maybe go to dinner before or after, or hit a food truck. Mm-hmm. Get to, you know, all kinds of interesting, like, things happen to you before or after the movie. So it kind of seems to be our thing when we're doing these. So, yeah. So we'll see what we maybe have in the future. Maybe got a couple eyes on a couple movies maybe to do. There's probably some good movies coming out here in, towards the end of the year to maybe review. Maybe even some new stuff.
Yeah, but so, we're definitely not going to go see that movie, that it. Because it's not happening.
Yeah, I'm not happening. I'm not a big horror movie person, so.
I'm afraid of, like, sewer drains after, like, watching the first one. We don't need to do that.
Yeah, and the amount of internet memes that are out there with, yo, come here, you know, we got, you know, whatever, so. Yeah. All right, well, once again, thank you all for listening. And if you've enjoyed this episode of TTN at the Movies, make sure that you listen to all the other great shows. Like I had mentioned at the beginning of this episode, but also including Drive Time with Kai Valentine and One Up Club and Finn in the NYC and Lou Chat. So, once again, I am Mr. Fourth Row with my friend Daisy. We're signing off, and you guys all have a great day. Thanks. Bye-bye.
There's so much in our history your teacher never told you. Like when the great eugenics wars erupted in 92. Genetic superhumans proclaimed themselves king. The greatest man among them, Kanunian Singh. He conquered half of Asia with his hair. Wrath, wrath, wrath. Whoever knew we'd come so far by 1980? Wrath, wrath, wrath of Khan. Ruled over fools round the world, and if that's not great, he owned a magic island. Never needs more pylons. Conqueror of nations, great and small. Wrath, wrath, wrath of Khan. Crowns toppled down, revolutions got really bloody. Wrath, wrath, wrath of Khan. Mobs took his job, so he fled with his 80 buddies. Took off in his starship, 'cause we used to have those. Why's no one remember him at all? Suspended animation kept him frozen hundreds of years. He bumped into the Enterprise and moved its crew into tears. He told them all a story and lowered their guard. He tried to take them over, but Kirk hit him hard. In exile, bloody vengeance did he swear. Wrath, wrath, wrath of Khan. Rots while he plots with his friends on his next invasion. Wrath, wrath, wrath of Khan. Finds people's minds can be changed with some small persuasion. Captures the Reliant. Comes on back defiant. Forces Kirk into a deadly game. Wrath, wrath, wrath of Khan. Hounds Kirk around with his ship and his shrieking eels. Wrath, wrath, wrath of Khan. Laps up a trap and gets tricked into losing shields. Ends his mighty story with a blaze of glory. Too bad search for Spock was kind of late.